I recently got myself into one of those full spirals, you know, and you're like comparing and you're thinking you should be further along in your life. And I was overplaying all the things that I could have done differently. Things like business ideas that I had that I never followed, or jobs that I probably should have left sooner, or jobs that I probably actually should have stuck out for a little bit longer. And I was getting so annoyed at myself and thinking, God, I just wish that I had my perspective and my mindset and my confidence when I was 22, because I would have gone so much further. And I was really sitting in that and kind of beating myself up about it. And then it hit me, before we can really look forward as our most kind of authentic selves, we really have to unpick all the shit that happened when we were younger and in our childhood. Like the thought patterns that we were taught and the environment that we grew up in and the pressures of society and all these things that really impact how we think. Like, how are we supposed to be our best, most amazing selves in our late 20s or our early 30s when we really have all this shit and all this baggage that we have to unpick? And that really is the episode. My lovely friend Monica joined me to talk all about casting off the baggage of how she grew up, of overcoming the challenges of growing up with a mentally unwell mother, and her journey of truly exploring herself in her weird years. She is amazing, and the episode is amazing, and I hope you really enjoy it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Well, Monica, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Excited to have you on.
Yeah, this is a bit different for me. So,
yeah, you've not done a podcast before.
No, but I don't feel like most people have. So I feel okay about that.
Yeah. This is true. And I said this to one of my friends who came on. And she was like, why would I have done a podcast? Yeah. I feel like I've known you for way longer than I have. I was trying to work out when we actually met. I think
October, November.
Yeah. Around then. And we met through, of course, one of our co-working days where we get lots of women in business and interesting creative fields together and kind of sit and supposedly do work.
Yeah.
Usually drink margaritas.
They're some of my favourite days, actually.
Really? I love them. Yeah. I love that. Same. I always like have to plan my week around them, though, because I know I'm going to do fuck all work.
Yeah,
so I'm like, okay, make sure I have nothing to do apart from send maybe 3 emails and then I have a co-work day.
Yeah, nice.
But I was so excited about like your history in terms of your work and what you're doing now, and I'd love you to just give a little overview of ReCabins.
Sure. Okay. So I started ReCabins, well, me and my business partner started ReCabins the November before last, and it was kind of born out of this idea of post-COVID being so burnt out and like quite just like fried mentally, not really knowing how to connect to people. I also went through a breakup just before that, and I really felt like me and my ex just couldn't get on the same page about anything. Our communication styles were so different, and I really wanted to have a space to go to just like decompress while that was all happening. And I just thought the options out there were like rubbish. So well, we've been thinking about it for a little while actually, and then I had a tarot card reading.
Love that.
Yeah, this like amazing like witch. And she had given me this amazing reading, didn't know anything about me. And then at the end was like, oh, do you want to hear anything about work? And I was like, yeah, 100%. She was like, okay, yeah, I see self-sufficient cabins in your future. And I was like, what?
No
I
haven't, way. Like, what, like out of the blue, she said that.
Yeah. And I was like, I haven't like vocalized that to anyone. Like, and it had been playing in my mind for like 2 years maybe to do it. So I was just like, no, that's not real.
Bizarre.
And like to my like business partner's credit, the next day I went to him and told him about the reading, and he was like, okay, let's do cabins. So it was like amazing. We just dove headfirst in, and like they're cabins that are like off-grid nature stays, and they're all designed to like feed your well-being. And there's stuff there that's like all like there to help your intimacy and connection with your partner, with yourself, like with nature. So it's nice. It's one of those things that I have really tried to like fill the gaps of what was missing in my own life and put it in there. And when I read people's reviews about it, I'm just like over the moon.
So, I love that. And where can we find them?
ReCabins.com. And we've got one in St Albans, 2 in Lancashire, and hopefully some more in the Cotswolds later this year.
Amazing. So. And I have actually been to one of them, and it was really cool. Yeah. And it is that kind of, I spent so long thinking like, oh, do I want to go with Chris? Do I want to go on my own? And it really is like one of those places that you just could completely escape to and like switch off. Yeah. And that's just amazing.
I really wanted this, like the first one anyway, to be accessible from London. So no one has to like really go out of their way to like hire a car and like that extra expense or like the extra day off work traveling. So it's like, quite nice that it's just there. So.
And I feel like every millennial woman wants to move to the countryside and raise goats. Yeah. Like that is, I feel like we've all got to the point where at one point we were like, okay, big tech CEOs, get to the top of the mountain, smash the glass ceiling, all this stuff. And now we're like, fuck it, let's just get a garden patch.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up in the countryside, so it was like, and the first cabin is actually near my family home, so it's quite nice to go back and like be reminded of how special like the countryside is, even though I absolutely love London. It's just so nice to have that break that's like just there.
It's impossible, I think, to disconnect from those roots, like when you have them, even though same, I absolutely love London, but growing up in Sussex and like really in the countryside, I get almost like itchy skin when I'm here for too long. I'm like, I have to get down to the coast and like be in water and kind of recalibrate. And I think what's funny with you is that every time we meet, I feel like there's something else that you just throw in there. Like obviously you've got ReCabins and you've also got this interior design business.
Yeah, we do a lot of like commercial interiors for big landlords, mostly like flexible office space. But we've been going like since 2021 with that, which is really great. It's the only way we actually can pay our bills. ReCabins doesn't pay us anything yet at the moment. But no, it's great. I love design. And that's, I think, why the cabins is actually so fun for me, is I get to be the end client. Like I'm never the client, so it's really nice to be like, oh, actually I get to make the final say.
So,
it's cute
and they are beautifully designed.
Thanks.
And yeah, I knew I wanted you to come on the podcast because I was like, you've gone through such an interesting work journey that I was like, this is going to be inspiring and relatable and interesting in so many ways. And then for everyone who comes on The Weird Years, we get a little form and we start to brainstorm ideas together, and you kind of threw a bit of a curveball that I wasn't expecting from your story, which was really interesting, which is, I guess, put it in your own words, but that you had quite an unusual upbringing.
Yeah, I'm one of five kids, and I've always had quite a strained relationship with my mum. She's always been on the like really far side of spiritual, I don't know, it's quite difficult. She's very like militant in her beliefs, and she's also she's not very good at accepting no as an answer. So she would always, I don't know, push your buttons and like really challenge you to think about this like spiritual side. And for the longest time, I actually had no idea that everybody else wasn't like being brought up the same way. I remember I was about seven and had a kid run up to me on the school playground telling me my mum does voodoo. And I just was like, what do you mean? Like, surely you do this at home too. It was so odd to me that everyone else wasn't just going home and doing the same thing. And it was only then when I had like that awareness that my mum was different to all the other mums that I started to really like challenge and like unpick her belief system and figure out whether or not that aligned with anything I wanted. But for so long, it was just like kind of forced upon me as a kid. Like, you don't really get any choices like the way you're brought up. But I think over the years as well, I realized that my mum is probably bipolar, and so her quite like out there spiritual beliefs coupled with her like mental illness just made it a really challenging like house to grow up in. Me and her have a very strained relationship to this day because it's always just been so combative. We've never been able to see eye to eye, and actually I find it even quite sad at the moment. She's just someone that's like very isolated and very alone because of how militant she is with this sort of stuff. She pushes people away really easily. And now she's kind of like fallen prey to like conspiracy theories online. So even just trying to engage with her on like any kind of conversation just feels like she's living in an alternate reality. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's intense. And so you had that experience when you were seven, and that, was it from then that it sort of opened your eyes that like, okay, this is quite different, and you started to notice?
Yeah, definitely. Differences. I think I'd never really even like questioned the little rituals that we had at home or whatever. I think the way that it impacted me the most like growing up was because my mum was quite pushy with it. She would try and talk to like other school mums on the playground, and because they didn't really want to hear it, they would then like tell their children not to hang out with me. So I got like bullied a lot because parents were telling their kids not to hang out with me because of my mum. Right. So that obviously built like so much resentment between me and my mum, which, yeah, I don't know, really, I guess impacted me longer term because all I then became was like a people pleaser. I just like wanted to be liked by anyone and everyone because I was bullied so hard at primary school. And yeah, I think over time that probably just like really delayed me discovering myself.
So. Yeah. So when did you go to uni or when did you leave like the family home? Because I guess that would have been a big shift.
Yeah, I went to uni, went to Nottingham, which was great. And I did quite a lot of travelling after uni as well. So that was really great. I remember like being really sad to come home. But yeah, I don't know. I think I was talking to a friend about this yesterday, actually. I think it was about like 21-ish that I really started, I guess, like distancing myself from the family home. I, like for most of my 20s, just didn't really go home, didn't visit the family. And that was because I was trying to avoid my mum and like those kind of conversations that would like inevitably crop up. But at the same time, so were all of my siblings. So we were all avoiding the home, which meant we all kind of, we're all not that close with each other because we've all had to do our own like survival technique.
Yeah.
Which is sad because I'd love to be closer with my siblings, but it is great that we're just like all so independent. Like we've really got that kind of don't need to rely on other people mentality, which is nice.
It's nice. It's a blessing and a curse. And it's so interesting that when you meet lots of people who, you know, very classically successful and people that you'd look up to, like yourself and me, definitely. And often you realize that there's something in their background, which was like why they felt the need to be so driven and forward focused and rely too much on anyone.
Yeah, definitely. I think as well with me, my mum never worked, so she kind of made this like spiritual like lifestyle her whole lifestyle, and we were actually raised by au pairs because she was just so absent, running around doing different spiritual activities. And it just meant that like I never really took her seriously. Like she never worked for herself. She never like made her own money. She was away with the fairies like this whole time. And so I always remember like never wanting anyone to see me that way. So it was just so important to me that I like had a career, had my own like finances, wasn't reliant on like my husband to give me an allowance or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And it's also what's like triggered me to, I guess, for a really long time, I didn't really know what my own relationship with spirituality was. I just found it all super triggering because I didn't want to be anyone that was too like woo-woo or away with the fairies. I didn't want anyone to see me the way I saw my mum. So that's been interesting, trying to like rediscover my relationship with that. So
you leave the family house, you're going to university, and then after that, did you move down to London?
Yeah, straight to London. And I've been in London since.
Okay. So you're kind of, did you feel like you're opened up to this whole world that maybe you didn't know that much about or you knew through your friends? Like, what was that? Was it exciting? Was it scary, challenging? Like, what's that feeling of coming out of quite a tight mindset into something new?
I don't know, because my childhood was still like relatively normal in that I like still had the same experiences that all my friends did. I just had like extra experiences, I would say, in terms of like how challenging things were at home. But I still like went out with my friends and did all the same things everyone else did, so none of that was overly like jarring, I would say. Like the biggest thing that I was always like jealous of was like my friends who had great relationships with their parents,
because
I always just remember feeling like that complete loss that I didn't have that. Which is sad. I actually think that like moving to London was like such a freedom moment. I just loved not having to deal with my mum like on the day to day. That was the best thing ever. My 20s were fun, in like long-term relationships, but like still quite fun. I don't know, it's I also went through a ton of therapy in my 20s as well, and probably saw my first taste of like career success. So I was riding like a big high of like getting to know myself, getting to know like that I was good at my job and like having that like validation and stuff. So it's nice.
And you said you kind of developed a bit of a people-pleasing behaviour. Mm. Do you think that was like the key thing that came out from your childhood and followed you into your 20s? Or
yeah, I think so. Yeah, after my like two long-term relationships in my 20s, after each breakup, I remember like a sense of relief that I could just like be myself again. And it was so enlightening to me that I have felt like I was performing for somebody else during those relationships. And I think it's probably why I've been single for a while now, is because I actually like I'm not prepared to, you know, put that mask back on for anyone. So I think that probably just came from like genuinely having to tread on eggshells around my mum. Like her like bipolar meant that she was really unstable and could go from like cruel to kind in like a second. So I think the people pleasing tendencies just come from like not really knowing how you stand in a room and like just trying to tread on eggshells. So yeah.
And you did therapy to unpick that stuff.
A lot of therapy. All my siblings have as well, which really is great. So
I love a bit of therapy. I'm a big proponent of therapy. I did child therapy when I was younger, and it's so funny because I completely forgot about it. And it was only when one of my siblings was like, oh, do you remember when we did child therapy? And I was like, fuck, yeah, I actually do remember that. That was weird. And I can almost like visualize the room. Maybe I've created this in my head, but I feel like it was almost like I must have been like, I don't know, 10 or 11, maybe younger. But I do remember there being like dolls and it being the epitome of like child therapy.
This is nuts.
It's like, why are you so angry?
Oh, no. Why were you so angry?
Well, mainly just me and my siblings would beat the shit out of each other. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that was the vibe of the siblinghood.
Oh, dear.
Now much closer. But I think also it's like when you've gone through... You know, I didn't have a difficult childhood, but my parents got divorced when I was 10, not in a great situation. Mm. Like my dad, they'd been married, I think, for 27 years. And my dad had an affair. And I think often when there's like something painful or like in that case, quite cataclysmic, but a painful thing in a household, like you'd think that siblings would band together, but often what you find is you're different ages, you respond to things differently, and you just sort of separate for a while. And as you said, kind of go into your like your own behaviors of survival. And you know, I think we've all dealt with it very differently. I definitely was more like outgoing party. I wouldn't say people pleasing, I'd say more like a
rebel.
Yeah, like anxious attachment style. If you've done, for any listeners, like attachment theory is fascinating. And there's an amazing book, I think it's called Attached.
Yeah.
We talk about attachment theory, which is essentially that your early childhood dynamics with your caregiver is what kind of sets the foundation of how you see future relationships. So there's secure, which is like everything's been great, happy relationships. You kind of know what to expect from your caregiver. They're always there. And so you move through the world with this sense of, you know, the people around me will be good to me and I trust them and all this. Yeah. Then you have anxious, which is the one where usually there's been some sort of trauma or breakup or something's changed. And so people act in this very kind of like needy and I think they call them protest behaviours.
Yeah.
It's that thing of when you text your ex-boyfriend something and you're like, oh my God, I didn't mean to send that to you. I meant to send it to somebody else.
Yeah, slightly manipulative.
Manipulative for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
I was queen of that.
Yeah, same.
It's so funny how you can really, now when I think back, I'm like, damn, I was really somebody's villain in their story.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I was anyone's villain, but I needed a lot of validation.
Mm.
All the time.
Yeah. What's the other one? The other one's avoidant, which is you kind of put people on pedestals and then the second you see anything that shifts from that perfect view, you kind of abandon them.
Yeah, you're
true. And the last one, I think, is disorganized, or it has a couple of different names where you flip between that really needy to very detached, which is probably one of the trickier ones. I think it's the least common.
Yeah. I would like to think I'm secure, but I think I'm somewhere between secure and attached. Secure and anxious. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm also there. It's funny because you know, one of the big things that is interesting in your story is like people always say, you know, your 20s are your experimentation time and when you really find yourself.
Yeah.
And when we've talked about this, I'm like, I just so don't agree with that narrative. No. Like maybe it used to be 20 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, my parents had their kids at 24. So like wow. maybe 20s were when they were figuring shit out. But like, I feel like most of my self-growth has happened in the last like 2 years. I'm 31.
Like you mentioned your two relationships. Do you feel like that behavior of people pleasing and like really wanting to be ambitious, did that guide the decisions you made in your 20s?
Honestly, I feel like my 20s were a blur at this point. Mm. I don't really remember loads of it, but I don't know. It was so wrapped up in like wanting to prove myself, I think, my 20s.
Mm.
I changed careers a few times as well in my 20s. I studied law at uni and then had always wanted to be an interior designer. So like that jump from law to interior design was quite a like stressful one because my parents obviously wanted me to be academic. Mm. Didn't really think I'd ever be able to creatively like pursue a career that way. And so like there was a lot of, you know, testing things and proving that I could along the way and then finally like getting validation that you can build a pretty successful career out of design. I think that was my goal of my 20s, was really trying to like prove them wrong that I could do it. And like it worked. It was good.
Yeah.
I remember my dad one day was like, I never thought you could build a career out of design and I'm so glad you proved me wrong. I was like, that's nice.
That's so satisfying. Because
he fought me on it like tooth and nail at the time. So it was, yeah, so satisfying.
Wow. Yeah. That's often what you hear, isn't it? Is that people are making decisions or choices like, and sometimes you don't even know what is your point of view versus somebody else's. Mm.
Yeah. I remember coming out of one of my relationships and thinking I had no clue what I thought about a thing.
Wow.
I remember being like, I have just gone along with what they wanted for so long that I don't know how I feel about politics, religion, friends, family, like any of that stuff. I was just like quite happy to be told how I felt, was feeling. So if my boyfriend at the time didn't really want to see my family because I also didn't really want to see my family, I let that be the narrative and was just like, yeah, cool, well, we won't see my family for a year. And then when I wanted to see them eventually, it was always a fight. Like, there was never, yeah, we can do that because you want to. It was, and I would just kind of be like, sure, okay, we won't do it. Which meant I just like distanced myself for a bit too long, I would say, from my family. So
what was the like catalyst to be like, what was the catalyst to start that journey of, okay, I need to work out what I want?
I think I knew my relationship was breaking down for a while before it ended. And like the turning point for me was this argument where I realized that what he was saying to me was just like so not in my best interest. It was just like, I remember hearing the words he was saying and I was like, you hate me.
Like, wow.
You hate me. Why are we together? And then I realized that like, I'd just been listening to his like hate speech for a while and I needed to just like distance and like recalibrate and figure out what I wanted. So yeah, it was, my friends have always said this, but whenever I go through a breakup, I like blossom into a new person and it's,
I love that,
but it's also quite sad to think I'm not that person when I'm in a relationship.
Mm.
And so I've done a lot of work like the last few years to just like really make sure I'm like very strong in my sense of self and like nobody can come in and tell me how I feel or I basically know that that's kind of like the default for me and so I have to like actively like work on not letting that be the case with someone.
Okay,
so,
like you fall into kind of passive behaviors with when you love someone.
Yeah, basically, because I want them to be happy too, so I'm like, yeah, whatever you want, you know. But then you just don't advocate for yourself over time, so
sure.
Yeah,
it's like that kind of turning up the heat by 1 degree every time until you're suddenly like, oh shit, it's boiling and I can't get out.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. So you did some therapy and what else have you been doing in this like getting to know yourself, rediscovering?
Well, I set up two businesses, which is quite intense. I traveled a lot of solo travel actually, which is like the first time I'd ever done that. One thing I had always wanted to do over my 20s and never did because I was always in a relationship with a man, but like I wanted to date women.
Mm.
And so when I was most recently single, I was like, now, do it now. Otherwise you'll get in another relationship with a man and then you'll be 60 and you'll have never done it. So I like spent some intentional time like questioning my like sexuality and like putting myself in positions that I'd never been in before, which was uncomfortable but like so enlightening and like also fun. Mm. But I'm not scared of like of being in places of discomfort. I just kind of think that's where you learn the most about yourself. Mm. So there's been a lot of that. And I don't know, I've just been making so many new friends as well. I think that's the one thing I've like really, really noticed about like having to distance myself from my family over my 20s is that I realised that I couldn't choose my family in that sense, but I could with friends.
Mm.
And so it's been really important to me to just realign like with people who like just see the world the same way as I do. I noticed over time that a lot of my friendships were just rooted in like legacy rather than real like shared love and like support. So I've done a lot of work to like shift people out of my life that don't really add any value. So
yeah. So sorry for the interruption. Lydia here. If you're liking this episode, please do give it a thumbs up or subscribe. Thank you so much. Sorry, I'll be quiet now. It's so bizarre, really, when you think about like aging and your 20s, your 30s, what's going to come next? Because for me, there used to be a real fear, I guess, around aging. And I think it came a lot from like the societal thing of, you know, when I was 20, I thought that I'd get married at 26 and like have babies at 28.
I thought the same thing.
And now I just think that's so fucking wild to me. I still feel like a child bride getting married at 31. And when you really think about that dynamic in the news, it's played out in such horrible ways of like people basically slag off women. It's never men. Mm-hmm. It's always women for having children too late and choosing their careers and things.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, I think the generation of women that we live in and, you know, that are growing up now, they're the ones who actually want to be in a really secure, good place before they move on to have kids or, to, you know, make massive decisions about their life. Because you don't want to do that from a place of trauma or, you know, fear or any of that stuff.
Yeah, totally.
It always plays definitely in my mind with having kids is that I have always thought, right, I need to be in like a really good place mentally if I'm going to have children. That's always like been a massive thing because I don't want to pass on any of my own like neuroticies or insecurities. And I know to a degree, like it's inevitable.
Sure.
You're going to do something, right?
Yeah.
But when you start to notice things about yourself that you're like, oh, I could work on that. It's been hard to ignore
it. There was a time where I thought, I think I land on not wanting to have kids.
Mm.
And I used to think that was because, you know, like hurt people. And I want to end that cycle. Like I had a really chaotic upbringing and I just do not want like any part in giving that to somebody else. Mm. But I don't think that's true. I don't think that is why I don't want kids. It's like it's operating from the same place as people that like really want to outdo their parents and give their kid a way better childhood. It's like it's a reaction. It's not actually like a deep belief about how you feel about children. It's really hard. I don't think the work will ever be done before you have a kid. Like nothing will ever prepare you. But I think you have to really want to have a child Like I think I can speak from my own experience that like when you know your parents didn't really want you or like have had any doubt about that, it's a really hard place to be as a kid. So yeah, I just think I need to be like dead certain I want them if I'm going to.
Wow, that's kind of heavy, feeling like your parents didn't want you guys.
Yeah, I don't know. It was always just like the narrative of like the things we could have done if we weren't parents. Like I heard that so often. And I think because we were raised by au pairs, it was like quite like obvious to us that our parents, or my mum anyway, didn't really like want to be a parent. Like she would spend as much time as possible away from the house. So
interesting.
Yeah.
What do you think drove her to be like that? To have five kids? It's a lot of kids.
Honestly, I don't know. And she's Polish. So she came over here when she was 19, met my dad, and they I think quite quickly, got pregnant and then married. But I think it was just like a security thing for her. I think she kind of just thought the more kids she has, the more like stable and secure her life is in England with my dad. And I don't think my dad in any way was like, let's have five kids. I think it kind of all just happened. I don't think the plan was a big family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because that kind of, I guess, conscious decision making is really what we're seeing now. It's like more and more people, as you say, going into it only if they feel like I really, really want this thing.
Yeah. I mean, also, I think it's so different now because I can afford to have five kids. Like the fact that my parents could just have five kids and it not really be a big blip, it shows how much times have changed.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot wrap my head around the idea that like, oh, another kid, fine. Yeah.
I think that's bizarre. I always think that now, like sometimes Chris and I, my husband, we talk about, you know, should we have done it earlier? Should we not have? And I'm like, where would the kid have lived?
Yeah.
Like, in the ensuite, in your studio next to a subwoofer? Like, how would we have a baby in here? It's not a reality.
Yeah, fair.
What's interesting now is that where your career has gone, it's almost like it feels so far away from that journey, I guess, of your growing up.
Yeah.
But also weirdly linked.
It is probably somehow linked. Like I say, I've been trying to like redefine my relationship with spirituality, and I've been like testing the waters with different things to see what I really think and feel about them without the pressure of my mum thinking I'm feeling something about it at the same time. But I don't know, the reason that like the cabins are so important for me to bring to people was feeling like I didn't have safety really growing up, or a place to like express myself and communicate. So I really wanted to like give people a really safe space to be and to be able to like get to know themselves as well as their partner. Like we have like kits inside the cabins that are all about like self-discovery, or if you're a couple there, like getting to know your couple better, or if you're with friends doing that, there's also like a kids edition to play with family.
Oh, cool.
And like there's like breakup editions, anxiety editions, self-love editions, and it's just like it's all the things I wish I'd had growing up. So
it's like you've created that little sanctuary.
Yeah, it's so nice. Like the reviews that people write when they specifically reference like the card games they played and how they've been together for like 20 years, but they didn't know that thing about their partner. It's just like so nice to be like, oh, helped. That's so nice.
There's also such a beautiful thing about like just turning off all the noise when you go there.
Yeah.
Like there's no Wi-Fi, right?
No. I mean, there's like cell signal. So if you really want to be on your phone, you can be, but we try not to be super prescriptive with people about how to be in the cabin. Like there are other cabin providers that like really like tell you to have a digital detox. And I think that's great. Like I'm too obsessed with my phone, so I would love the like opportunity to just lock it away in a box. But I wanted it to be a place where people could just come and do what they wanted, like which might be writing and doing work. It might be completely disconnecting from that, but
yeah,
it's like their space for the weekend. So
it's so nice, especially being out in nature. I can really relate to that thing of trying to have a little sanctuary. I think after my parents got divorced, I had such a weird thing in my head about like a house.
Really?
Even though I live in the same house that they lived in together, and we actually never moved. So the house that I was like born in, not in the house, but you know, with a baby in, is the same house that my mum still lives in. But I now realize that my obsession with buying property and like decorating it and stuff is doing exactly that, like trying to make this little cocoon that's like an expression of you when you've sort of shut it up for a long time.
Yeah, totally. I think that's actually why I wanted to be an interior designer, was like my parents' house was so like cluttered and it was so them, and we had zero expression as to like how the house was laid out or like color of walls or anything like that. And so it was like infuriating to me my whole childhood that I couldn't change a thing. And so I think it was like nice to be like, I finally have freedom and I can go and do and make this as pretty or as like decluttered as I want, which is nice.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I love kind of seeing those things as I get older. I'm picking apart these things that I think is hard held beliefs, and then I'm like, oh, that was just a reaction to this other thing in my life.
Yeah.
It's a journey. And I don't think it's ever done, but all those tools you talked about, like with therapy, and I'd actually love to know more from the spiritual side what you've been playing around with. You mentioned tarot cards.
I love getting my like psychic readings done. Although at times I think I've had the occasional like bad reading.
Really?
So I haven't been for a while, actually. But I really like the idea of like getting in touch with what is beyond, maybe. I have so many like stories of like ghost experiences growing up that
Can you give us one? For the tea?
Sure. Yeah, so there was one where I wasn't very well, actually. I was at my family home, maybe home from uni, and I had gone to have a nap just to like get rid of this cold I was like fighting. And because my mum is quite spiritual, she's the kind of person that would totally come in while you're having a nap and try to like heal your energy without your blessing.
Right.
So I remember waking up from my nap and like feeling this like weight on the end of the bed, like someone was sitting there, and I looked up and there was like a shadow that just looked like my mum. It was a completely dark room, so I couldn't really see, but I just was like, oh, for God's sake, that's so annoying, she's here, just ignore her, and like went back to bed. And I went downstairs after my nap and kind of told her off and was like, why did you come into my room? And like, I was clearly asleep. And she was like, I didn't. And my siblings were like, no, she didn't. She's been here this whole time. So I was just like, well, who was sat on the end of my bed? Because someone was.
No, that like, freaks me out.
I felt it like at the end of, like on my feet, I could feel someone. So
I love ghost stories, but also then they terrify me.
Yeah, I don't know. I think all of mine, they've all been like really harmless. Like, and actually, I think even with that story in particular, whoever or whatever was sat at the end of my bed was trying to take care of me. And that's how I like interpreted that feeling. I thought it was my mum, you know? So I was just like, I don't think that there's anything that scary about what's there. My mum always used to have like little Polaroid photos of her aura, like at home in her office.
Wait, how do you take a photo of this?
So I had this done last year. I don't actually know what kind of camera it is that they use, but they take a picture of you and you have all of these like myriad colours around you. And depending on what colour you are, it shows different character traits and like different ways of responding to situations and things.
Okay.
But I remember one just like that the photos were like really pretty. And so I was always quite interested in them. And anyway, I got mine done last year, and it's quite funny. I went with my housemate, and we are just like completely like different colours and like different spectrums, and we're like, oh yeah, that does make sense for you. But I also now get acupuncture quite a lot, and it's a more like elemental acupuncture rather than like treating the muscles. It's more about like the chi in the body, and that's supposed to like help you be slightly more like mentally resilient to things in your life. And like if your energy is super low, it's probably because you've got a blockage somewhere. And this is all like terminology I would have absolutely been triggered by if you'd asked me 10 years ago. But I've just met this amazing woman who like really resonates with me, and I absolutely love going to see her now. So yeah, it's really interesting. I like for so long was just like, No spirituality, no like woo-woo at all.
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay, a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit.
Do you share those experiences that you do, like with your mum? Does she, like, is there a common ground? Or
you know what, no. I have not told her any of those things. Only because whilst being very spiritual, she's also quite judgmental.
Right.
So I think there's an element of if I was doing it, I wasn't doing it the right way. So I'd try not to have that conversation if possible.
But so as always, we ask this out to our listeners, which is like it was a really difficult question to pose. I kind of asked them how their early upbringing had shaped their lives and decisions. And a few people wrote in. So this is from a female who's 33. A lot of them are anonymous submissions, which you can do through our Instagram. And it says, I'll try to keep this short, but I would say I am where I am, not because of my upbringing, but despite it. My parents were very strict, tough Caribbean parents, literally never any words of affirmation or guidance. Shelter and being fed, that's it. I guess if things had been different, I probably would have had a lot more confidence and self-esteem and a stronger sense of self at a younger age. All the things I wanted to be, I got there in the end, but it felt like walking 4 hours for what could have been a 15-minute drive. Lol.
Lol. That's so relatable. Yeah. I feel like my household was also similar in terms of like no words of affirmation. Like nothing was ever very like good. We're all very like academically pushed, but even when we succeeded, it wasn't good enough.
Mm.
So I totally get that. And I think, I mean, props to her for really like getting there eventually. But yeah, I think it is possible, right? Just like overcoming your childhood is possible. So
sure.
Yeah.
And if, you know, I kind of probably had the other way around where I remember my mum especially is just she's so kind and she was always telling me like, you're so smart, you're so beautiful, you're so this, that I almost did the opposite thing where I just presumed all those things were inherently true.
Right.
And then I remember it was only when I got to university where for the first time I did something and I wasn't immediately good at it.
Mm.
And I was like, what the fuck? Like, I'm so special.
Yeah.
I'm so talented. Like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, I'm so smart. How have I not done this?
Yeah.
And it's almost like the other route of trying to find that grit and something to push against.
Yeah, fair. It's nice to have a little bit of a balance between them, I think.
I mean, a balance would be ideal. But it's just such an interesting thing of we have all these expectations of where we think we should be in life. And it's like, we've got to do a little bit of work.
Oh, for sure. Everyone.
Before we get there.
Yeah.
This one's also anonymous. I don't know if it's male, female or the age. But they said, well, I was religious and always feared hell. I didn't have a nice childhood, so I had to leave my country. But I'm becoming stronger mentally and physically since starting believing in life before death, brackets, Buddhism.
Oh.
And this was interesting to me because I obviously heard about life after death.
Yeah.
But life before death, I didn't know anything.
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah.
Is
so that... I asked
okay.
ChatGPT.
No.
I was like, what is life before death Buddhism? Yeah. And there's a couple of different principles, but one of them is impermanence. They call it anicca, if I'm saying that right. That everything in life is constantly changing, and understanding this can help people let go of attachment and suffering. And I was like, love that.
Yeah.
Karma, which obviously lots of people know, is actually from a Buddhist point of view, that the energy you put out, the way you act people impacts your current life. Mindfulness and presence, so obviously teaching people about being present in daily life. And also this thing about personal transformation and enlightenment, so Nirvana, which obviously I was a huge Nirvana fan when I was younger, so I know the word, but not just a band, that it's about escaping the cycle of rebirth. So it's about achieving clarity, wisdom and compassion in this lifetime.
Nice, I love that.
It's interesting how this person has picked up a religion or got closer to their religion, and it's literally like helped them move away from this difficult childhood they had.
Yeah, totally. I think it's so interesting when people grow up with like very strict religious upbringings. It's like so hard to know how to exist outside of those like hard and fast rules, I think. Mm. People really have to like do that work. It sounds like they have, which is nice.
Yeah. This person, also anonymous, said, honestly, I had to let go of a lot of self-doubt and fear of not being good enough. Boxing and kickboxing were game changers for me. They gave me a space to release all the stress and negativity I was holding on to. And over time, they built my confidence in ways I didn't expect. Love it.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that cool?
That's cool. Yeah. That's actually one thing I wish I'd gotten in touch with earlier, was like exercise.
Mm.
I remember just absolutely hating going to the gym or doing any kind of exercise in my like early 20s.
Mm.
And it was only when I started like actually using that like 3 times a week did I realize that I wasn't anxious anymore. I was like, oh, I've been anxious for however long.
Yeah.
I just needed to go work out. Like,
exercise is like a crazy drug.
Yeah.
I always say to people, and it's like, I understand it's fucking annoying for someone to say this to you, but for me, when I'm anxious, it's literally, firstly, don't touch caffeine.
Yeah.
Like, so many people I know cut out caffeine and they feel so much better. Yeah. Just like that underlying nervous system and like, I don't know, it's like the, just something being off balance in your body.
Yeah.
And sport. And I think this thing of sport and confidence, like there's actually a lot of interesting research that the reason that women have lots of autoimmune conditions, they've done this thing, it's like multivariate tracking, basically, where they look at all these different variables which might lead to autoimmune conditions. And the thing that they think is one of the most impactful is unreleased anger.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh God, yeah, I bet women are sitting on a lot.
And I thought that was fascinating. I heard some doctors talking about it, and they said you can, when someone walks into a room to be tested, you can, within 5 minutes, without even looking at them, you can tell if they have an autoimmune condition, because they will be the most kind, passive, like going along with everything kinds of people.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is wild. Oh my God, that's scary though.
It's very scary. Yeah. And my mum has autoimmune conditions. And I think a lot of it is that like unreleased anger.
Just,
you know, you have things,
resentment.
Things happen in your life, and you've got, I'm one of three. It's like you've got three kids. You can't just lose your shit. You have to be the stable parent, and that must build up. And I think that's what's interesting when they're talking about kickboxing and boxing, is that kind of somatic release of energy.
Yeah, totally. Apparently yoga is the best thing for really releasing like trauma and stress from the body. There's loads of like vets in America, like war veterans that are subscribed to yoga to release their PTSD, because it is consistently the like most well-proven form to release that.
I find that with, I mean, I think they call it like somatic movement. A friend of mine who's actually been on the podcast, Zoe, she does a lot of it with dance and like releasing energy. Just the connection between your body and physicality is mad strong.
Yeah, for sure. I always feel like so hyped up after a run that I'm always like dancing after the run, and it's like the best feeling ever.
I love that.
Yeah.
I get that with netball. It's like the one thing that really gets that energy out.
Yeah.
I'm going to read one more. So this is a female, 33. And she said, I had to drop the baggage of people pleasing. I would stay longer at events when I really just wanted to go home and have my dinner. I felt pressure to show up and even drink when I didn't want to. I had to move through this to be happy and be less anxious. Now I think there's a mid ground between people pleasing versus being selfish and not thinking of others. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to find that line. I'll show up for events and go for a few hours, but then head home, putting myself first and having some alone time. She also said that therapy really helped me get to this place. Obviously, it's a journey. I'm not 100% there, but I threw myself into the process of saying no, and you have to get used to that.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because last year was my year of no. And I realised it, like, especially with the number of like Hindus and weddings I was being invited to, that like real obligation to say yes to going to all of those things, even if the person getting married was, you know, kind of in my friendship group, but someone I speak to one-on-one, like once a year.
Right.
So I decided to like just say no to those rather than feel obliged to go. And instead, like took myself to my first ever yoga retreat abroad and like made some really amazing friends. And like, I remember it was noted like within my friendship circles that I'd said no to going to some of these things, but I was like, but I'm just putting my life on pause to say yes to doing what you want me to do. Like, I've always wanted to go do a yoga retreat, so I'm going to go do that now instead. And like, as soon as you explain it to people, they're like, oh yeah, no, fine, I get it. But people don't like to hear the word no.
They don't.
So, yeah.
I think to anyone who feels like they should say no more, to me, the best piece of advice, I don't even know who told me this, it might have been a podcast. No, it was so long ago it wasn't a podcast. It was probably like an auntie or something. Is that if you're going to say no to things, do it as soon as possible.
Oh, for sure.
Like, don't be that person who 2 weeks before the event goes like, hey, what time is it again? And then you go quiet. And then a week before goes like, I'm feeling kind of ill.
Yeah.
And then 2 days before they're like, oh, I'm still feeling. It's like, just don't do that.
Just say no.
Just say no. And it's also totally fine, as you said, to say, look, I've always wanted to do this thing. I don't have unlimited time and budget.
Yeah.
And this is something that's really important to me. And if people love you on the whole, they're like,
they want you to do the thing that makes you happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And me not being a thing doesn't actually impact the day, really.
No.
Like, they all still have a really fabulous time. So.
Exactly. Yeah. I can say that. Having got married, it's like you want everyone to be there, but it's like you don't look out and be like, oh, I wish that person was there.
Yeah, exactly.
You're too full of champagne.
Yeah.
Okay, last bits. Knowing what you know now, what's the one thing you'd tell yourself 10 years ago?
I think I would probably tell myself to stop seeking external validation. For a really long time, my self-worth was tied to how other people viewed me. Mm. And yeah, I think I just should have filled up my own cup way earlier. So, yeah.
I love that. And what's one thing you wish for yourself in 10 years?
Actually, this one's kind of materialistic, but...
That's okay.
I want to be in a place where I'm splitting my life between London and somewhere like really hot and sunny. Mm. I want to have a really lovely like villa in the hills where I just like invite friends to come and live with me all summer and just like have that. A lovely little community of people that just want to have a nice time outside of London. So
amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is the very last part. This is rapid fire. So okay. I'm going to ask you 5 rapid fire. They're not really questions. They're just words I've thrown together.
Sure.
And I want you to answer with yes or mess. Yes, if you think it's a good thing. Mess, if you think it's a mess. You can expand on it if okay. you want to. I'm not strict on it.
Right.
The first one, fortune tellers.
Yes.
Great.
100%.
Oh, getting bicurious in your 30s.
Yes. 100%.
Bit off the side, TikTok as your news source.
Oh, no, mess. Mess. Yeah, for sure.
Agree. Dating someone much younger than you.
Oh, mess. Having gone through such a like period of self-exploration, I feel like people way younger than me are still having that. Mm. And I've actually been on a bunch of dates where men have been like, wow, you've really got your shit together. And I think when you hear the word wow on a date, you suddenly are like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Like, why don't you have your shit together? Like, this isn't impressive, you know? Like, yeah. So I would say no to dating younger.
Mess.
Yeah.
Last one, solo holidays.
Oh, yes, 100%. Yeah. I think, like, the best, and again, this goes back to, like, my cabin business, but, like, my first solo trip was to a cabin on my own in the hills in Wales. And it was just like the most special experience to just be able to do whatever I wanted at whatever time. And again, I guess it was like me trying to get free of being a people pleaser, but not having anybody else to consider was just the most liberating thing I've ever had. Yeah.
I honestly encourage everyone to do that. I still do that. Even though, you know, I married, I did my first one was to Suffolk to like a little Airbnb. And it was like this very cute brick outhouse on a farm.
Cute.
And I took my yoga mat. I took like my painting stuff.
Love.
I painted for 10 minutes and then got incredibly angry because that's how I paint.
Sure.
And I watched a movie. I drank like a bottle of red wine. And I was like, this is fucking amazing.
So nice. Love
and
that.
Yeah. I think as women... And as men, like everyone in this world, you're absorbing all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes you really just need that quiet to be like...
Totally. I have so many friends, whenever I'm going solo traveling, they ask me if I'm going for work for like a research trip. And I'm like, no, I'm just going for me. There's no agenda. It's like just to chill.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good thing to end on. More people do things for you.
Yeah, 100%.
Find what you want to do.
Fill up your own cup.
And maybe do it in a cabin.
Yes.
Maybe do it at a recabin.
Do it at the cabins.
Oh, and before you go, if you enjoyed this chat, please do like and subscribe. It helps to keep this project going. Also, we're in this collective confusion together, so we really love to hear your stories. Each week, we ask for your point of view on the upcoming topic. So head over to our Instagram, @theweirdyearspodcast, to share your thoughts, feelings, and little stories.